Welcome to the Awakening Shalom Podcast. The Awakening Shalom Podcast is an opportunity for digital faith formation at Myers Park Baptist Church that accompanies the Awakening Series, a year-long journey of exploration and discernment which invites all people to come learn about the current social justice issues of the day and how they impact our faith. What we are awakening to is shalom, the Hebrew word for the peace and beauty that exists when we are living in right relationship with God, ourselves, other human beings, and all created things. Hello, and welcome back to the Awakening Shalom Podcast. I'm here with Bethany Johnson, and we are diving into Chapter 2 of Brian Bantam's book, The Death of Race. Chapter 2 is entitled Bodies Matter, which is kind of fun, matter and bodies. I like that.
That was the best slash nerdiest pun you've made in this whole podcast series. I'm here for it. I really love that.
Let's be nerdy. So much fun. So let's talk about how bodies matter. I think right out of the gate, Brian starts out with some interesting stories about racist stereotypes and tropes that are used against that were used towards him, and how that was a really just pointing out body difference. And we kind of dealt with that in the other podcast on The Body is Not an Apology. But it's like we're looking at each other's bodies and we're looking at our own bodies and we're just constantly pointing out difference, you know?
You're not like this and I'm not like this. And what you were talking about in the last episode about narrative comes up right away, because he says he and his brother, because of their bodily differences, had to craft a narrative about who they were more like and who they would then identify with more, which is what leads Bantam probably to checking that white box when
That's
he's
right.
a kid, right?
That's right. He identifies with his mother.
Yeah.
And so he checks the white box because of that. You know, he doesn't know how to explain as a child the body difference between himself and his mother. He has a difficult time because he's in this middle space and he keeps identifying in different ways with different kinds of bodies. The fact that he's having to struggle to identify bodily just shows how the narratives about bodies conscript us into these ideologies of what's the right body, what's the dominant body, what's the normative body, what's the good body. Mm-hmm. And you can see him struggling through those and trying to figure out where's my spot? Where do I fit? Where do I go? You know?
And, you know, with the story he tells about being called fish lips.
Yeah.
Where he's being chased around the playground. The thing that really stuck out to me there, too, well, it relates back to Taylor's book, because she talks about the earliest shame narratives that have to do with your body.
Yeah.
And so he's getting this right away. And so when he realizes or sort of, quote unquote, like becomes black, accepts his blackness at the age of 19, he has this long shame narrative behind him that he'll have to spend time unpacking,
right,
getting to that radical self-love that we hear about from Taylor. But you also think, how is it that children this young know how to do this?
Right.
Right?
It's in the water. It's in the soil.
Water. We're just soaking in it. And we know, even if we don't talk about it, and you spoke about this last episode too, not talking about something doesn't mean it ceases to do damage in the world.
Right. Yeah. And he talks about how there are these forms of the creation narrative and other forms of theology that have no flesh in them. Huh. They're stories without flesh because they can't – the way they have been taught to him, the way they have been read to him, don't account for bodies,
right,
don't account for flesh. And so he has these almost Gnostic, you know, excarnate readings of Genesis that have been given to him. And he now – and then when he returns to it, which like I said in the last one, this whole book is like an extended rereading or rewriting of the book of creation, mm-hmm, Genesis. It is him sort of going back and saying, look, I see bodies there. I see creation. I see land. I see flesh. I see difference. I see God saying good, you know, sort of the opposite. Like God says good, we say nah, you know. This is all throughout. And this is, again, why he's trying to go back. It's interesting as he's trying to build this new Christianity that he goes all the way back to the beginning of the Bible, mm-hmm, to start, you know, maybe that we need a book on this on every book of the Bible. There's one. Here's the Leviticus rewritten. Here's right. Judges rewritten, you know, from a bodily perspective where we deal with bodies in a different way, right?
And he says that retracing the beginning is a kind of resistance. So this is radical work that he's doing.
Yeah.
He's going back to the root, deconstructing and rebuilding. And that is radical.
That's exactly what Sonya Renee Taylor said was radical. Nobody, and this is the thing that's important. You know, people don't like to hear the truth. What they usually don't like to hear is the truth of something that happened recently or in the past that they don't like, mm-hmm. and that they don't know how to understand, yeah. or that conflicts with the narrative of that they've created for themselves of the goodness of America or the goodness of their whiteness or the goodness of their community, the goodness of police, mm-hmm. The innocence of all those groups. And when something doesn't work with that, there's usually a reaction, a strong reaction to that narrative. So this is why last time we were talking about like rewriting Western civilization and dealing with black excellence and black civilization building in Africa doesn't really work for the white European Western civilization narrative, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that's important for us because theologically speaking, Jesus says we forgive but we don't forget. In fact, almost all of Christianity is about remembering rightly. Remember, 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 they killed me, the empire killed me. We're supposed mm-hmm. to remember that every Sunday, right? Yeah. We're supposed to, every time we have communion, we remember how they killed Jesus.
His body was broken.
His body was broken.
In the service of empire.
Right. And that's what gives us life and salvation, ironically and paradoxically, right? So it's a, we don't always read that way, that we're actually doing, that memory is dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's like, I think it's Johann Baptist Metz who said the dangerous memory was the terminology he came up with. And remembering that Jesus was murdered is dangerous. Like, I'm sure that was kind of a wild thing for the disciples to be doing in like 3 years after he died. He's like, yeah. Hey, guys, let's get together in this room and talk about how they killed Jesus again. And then let's eat.
That could be seen as, you know, treason.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember that thing they killed him on? Like, let's make that our symbol.
Right.
Right.
That's like, radical.
We're making that like, we're going to tell everybody over and over again. Yeah, you killed him on that. Remember? But God did something different. So isn't it interesting that you tried to kill him, but then God raised him. So, haha, you know.
If what you're talking about, that feeling of discomfort, you know, it's called cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
Right? I want something to be this way. I now have heard it's another way. The tension that I feel, I want to evacuate that tension as soon as possible. And I think for anybody listening, this keeps coming up for us, right? This, how do we tell a more accurate or a fuller narrative, story, truth, and how does that make us uncomfortable, and how does that make us contend with, in this case, our whiteness and faith, however we
right.
experience that. But I think what is helpful, the further you get into the journey, is that sitting with that discomfort allows you a certain kind of freedom.
Yeah.
Because now you say, oh, this is something that is being done to all of us. I'm perpetuating it. If
yes.
I can start to stop perpetuating it.
It's happening to all of us.
Now only I understand why it's tense at this bus stop, but now I have a way out.
Yeah.
And that is actually good.
Yeah.
Actually.
That's right.
You still get to feel really uncomfortable and you still mess up all the time, but knowing why, knowing what results from the system that you're in and knowing that you can do better and that you can do it differently is really helpful.
Absolutely. That super socially conscious rapper Talib Kweli has a song mm-hmm. called It's Happening to All of Us. It's
yeah.
just they repeat that mantra over and over again. And it's like, God, I wish white people could hear that, right?
Yeah.
This is happening to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Police murdering black people in the street. You may think you're protected by this somehow in some strange kind of way and kind of you are, but that's not – no, it's happening to all of us. All children are our children, right?
Yeah.
It's like those books about like how we should care about public education.
Right.
The education of children is educate for all of our children. Right? Every child is all of our children.
Who's going to take care of you when you get old?
Yeah,
all
exactly.
All of our children.
Right. Who's going to take care of running the country and running these businesses and running them more equitably and safely and with all of our interest in mind when we get older and we're not able to do it? Children,
the
right?
The people we didn't care about when they were in elementary
The people
school.
That we didn't feed and care for
right.
and give educations to. And surprise, surprise, they don't know what they're doing in Congress.
So we have to deny our humanity to make it possible for someone else to deny theirs.
Right.
But that is the heart of this that makes it worth the discomfort is that you get your humanity back.
That's right. That's right.
You get a narrative back. You get to be back in your body, in your story.
Which that's shared liberation to go back to that point. If you've come here for my help me, don't come to save me or help me. But if you come because our liberation is tied together, then let's work together. You know, and I think that's as white folks, we've got to come to see that our liberation is tied up in recovering our humanity that we have denied when we have said that's not our problem.
Yeah.
You know? But I, you know, one of the ways that this works out in this particular book, as he retells the story of colonialism and its impact on bodies is mm-hmm. the work that he does related to the language of subjugation.
Yes.
And I would add to that dominion. So there's this language in Genesis early on that has become a pretty powerfully problematic way of reading Genesis. And that is like that when that the human beings are given dominion over all the creatures of the earth in early on. And, you know, I just want to make sure everybody who's listening to this, who's a complementarian, hears me say that God didn't pull Adam aside and be like, yeah, bud, and you're really in charge of that one. So get on it. That never happened. It was kind of a joint dominion that was given at the time.
The Hebrew is pretty clear about that. Yeah. Genesis as well, the word that's used.
Right.
If you need to read a whole book about that, it's called Why Not Women, and it's actually written by the people that started YWAM. So,
cool. Yeah. There's a whole great thing about exegeting the story where Eve takes the apple. We can go into that riff sometime because the Jewish reading of that is far
very
better.
Different. Yeah.
Far better than the Christian reading of that, which is like, she's lustful and took that apple and led me astray.
She likes snakes.
She likes snakes. Oh, my God. That's so true. Like, that's what
why?
It's like. She likes snakes.
Yeah,
what?
She's, yeah.
She likes Satan, too. She's a witch.
Absolutely. When I grew up, I realized that, you know, the only way I have been told, you know, Eve was evil, and so I didn't like her. And the only reason I like Ruth is because she gave up her whole identity and laid at a man's feet and didn't exist. But she was the hero when I was growing up.
Quote, unquote, feet.
Right, yeah. I know. Oof. And then if you start actually studying those languages, it gets real dicey.
Yeah.
You know, but that's how women were portrayed for me growing up. Bantam talks a lot about the gender issue here.
Yeah.
And I think that gender discrepancy, as you talked about last episode, also grows out of colonialism.
Right.
Because if you have to have a racial hierarchy, you have to have a gender hierarchy so that the lesser gender can help you uphold that racial hierarchy.
That's right. And dominion and subjugation, I think it's really important to think about how those words are used really around land and creature, but they become really used about land and bodies, right? So creatures are to be subdued. The land itself is to be, creation itself is to be subdued and used for labor and working on it and all that and producing crops. And you see all this kind of play out here. But the labor that Adam has to do, if you read this story carefully, that happened as a result of the curse.
Yeah, you will toil.
Right, just like childbearing for women.
You will be in pain.
It's a curse,
and you will toil.
And we're like, oh yeah, cool. We get to be capitalists. No, dude, that was a result of sin. You know, it's like. You
did.
Remember,
you
it wasn't because that was like God was like, and I created this great garden where you get to subjugate everyone else. You know, that's not what creation. It was the purity was there. The violence that comes from having to strive and toil comes later as a result of the curse that we created for ourselves. You know,
well, so, post-colonialism, we define subjugation as abuse.
Right.
You know, subjugation can't be maintaining or helping to create order and then protecting that order. Subjugation is power over and power from the top down.
Right.
I think it looks different than it probably was meant to in the
garden. Right. That's right. And so, yeah, and it actually, there is a different relationship with the land that God had intended in to consider ourselves a part of the land and also in charge of. There's actually the better reading of it is as stewards.
Yeah.
Right? Not as subjugators or overlords, you know?
We didn't like when the indigenous people operated that way when we first got here, so we just killed them so we could do what we really wanted to do with their land.
Yeah.
Or we drove them out or we put them in other places.
And the
or, you
know. Really ironic and horrible thing is that they had a more Christian understanding of the land than we had when we got here.
When they gave plants back to the land, when they ate fish and reburied the bones and they had all of the
when they had deep
practices.
Levels of respect for that
Absolutely.
Which they killed to eat, you know, and used no more than they had to use, right? Think of how earth
use
conscious.
The whole animal.
Right. Mm-hmm. And deep respect and veneration for the land, right? Yeah. And almost a oneness with it where you could almost not distinguish land from people.
But Puritans thought that was idolatry.
Right. And that's because Puritans were so separated from the land, it's not even funny. Like one of the ways of whiteness, that's a good way to put it. One of the ways of whiteness is to become so heavily mental and conscious that you think landedness, you're more transcendent than the land. Landedness is for uncivilized folks, right? But civilized people transcend the land. They're not tied to the land. They can go wherever they want. They can do whatever they want. In fact, they're in charge of the land. They're making money off that land, you know? Whereas actually a more Christian view of it, a more Hebraic view of it, more about shalom and harmony traditions within native traditions and other religions is that you're at one and at peace with the land. Mm-hmm. And that the land and humanity and land and community and people are all writ together, you know? And you see this actually in a very kind of monstrous way now in the fight of around landedness with Israel and Palestine.
Yeah.
Who owns the land? Well, that's really now about capitalism and power and violence and protection and security and safety.
The nation state.
And a nation state. Yeah. But the root of it, the core in biblically speaking, is tied to that people and land are connected permanently. Mm-hmm. An eternal relationship is created and that the land and the people can't be separated, and because they're tied together. So when you say you're going to subjugate the land, you mean you're going to subjugate the land and all the people on it that you find, including all the creatures. And when you've already decided that certain creatures that have brown and black bodies are really like animals, not like you, you know, white humans, you're going to subdue all of that, and you're going to dominate it instead of being stewards of what you encounter when you go for discovery or explore the world. And it just shows you how one tiny little interpretation of a text can set the stage for colonialism for 2,000 years.
And Banta's back here saying, we need a reformation. The body is text and we are dirt.
Yeah, right.
Page 30. We are dirt. Not in a dirt is bad way, but that calling someone dirt, right? That is the inheritance of separating yourself from the land and then saying, I will abuse and subjugate it.
We are dirt. We're formed from the dirt. And I always say when people die, from dust you came and to dust you will return. I mean, that's about as Christian as it's going to get. And then but somehow we have gotten this idea that that's bad, like dirt's bad. Meanwhile,
well, the only thing that matters is what you do in between the dusts.
Right.
Right.
Or the dash.
Yeah.
To be super sentimentally cheesy. What'd you do in your dash? I went to the bathroom mostly.
Slept for 30 of those.
30, exactly. Oh my God. I think that this there's so much here that hints towards the reformation of theology that has to happen, because all of our concepts are written with this narrative of race and colonialism. Even the way we interpret scripture, the way we read bodies, the way we look at gender, the way we look at race, the way we talk about like, and when I talk about capitalism and colonialism, the way we talk about what our job in the world is to do, is it to work? You know, I just said I try to just re-narrate work as a curse and not as normative. Right. Rest is normative, right? God rests, you know. So we have kind of flipped that. Rest is the aberration. We sometimes randomly have
rest
to rest.
What you earn.
But we work. That's what we – humans are workers, right? Protestant ethic in the spirit of capitalism. You know, it is – we go out, we work, we toil on the labor, on the land, and we reap the profit. We reap the harvest. And look at what we've brought in and look at what we've created. So we're almost like using the land. Even if we're not subduing it, we get into this like we use the materials, the material resources to create wealth, power, technology, security for ourselves. And they're just – we're alienated, and this is not just – I'm using that word intentionally because it's very Marxist. We're alienated not just from the means of production. We're alienated from the land itself because of the way that we have started to think about what we're supposed to do with it.
And what we've been talking about from the beginning of this year is that the disembodiment that has happened through Christianity over the last couple thousand years, this is an extension of that narrative. You're trying to alienate yourself from your body by doing some of those other subduing things on it. You have to earn the right to eat certain foods by being good all these other times.
That's
right. You have to earn the right to take a nap by working out this many times. And that's why I was talking about the transition from sustenance to power. When you think about when we're doing New Year's resolutions and how you eat and how you work out and how you relate to your body. We used to have to sustain our bodies this way, but now that we've figured out some of those systems and we've been able to make them work for some of us, now it's a reflection of power and we can choose in and choose out. But we are continually, from when we're divorced from the land, we continue to try to do that subjugation now on our own bodies.
Right. The thing that we are the most connected to, the least alienated from, is our phones.
I think that's accurate.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like that, which then reinforces how alienated we really are from the land, from ourselves, from who we are as creatures first, right? Yeah. Like before we're humans, we're animals, and we walk along this earth and we make our living through plants and vegetables and meat and other things that we find on the earth. And we have now gotten to a place where we can eat. You can go through the world right now eating nothing natural. You can just eat all non-natural things.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's not a plant. It's not a vegetable. It's not a fruit. It's not an animal. It's a
it's
Cheeto.
In the lab.
It's a Cheeto.
it's a hot
Cheetos and Takis. That's what it is. You know, and it's but that and for a lot of us, you know, we have the privilege to choose that. But for others, that's all that they have available to them. So that's what they eat. You know, and I think we have to think about how bodies and land are connected. So as we, I think what we're learning is to build this new Christianity that Abandon is talking about. There's all these reconciliations that have to happen.
Yeah.
And one of the first ones is we've talked about a lot is body soul.
Yeah.
But now we're talking about body land, human land, right? Mm-hmm. Creature land connected back together. And every time we do a duality or a binary or whatever you want to call it, that fissure that we create is a fissure in our theology that leads to violence. Almost always it leads to violence. When we say there are white bodies and black bodies, now we can subjugate them. When we say there's land over here and then humans over here, suddenly we're subjugating and destroying the land, right? And I love that. You know, how interesting is it now that we're dealing with climate change, right? And we're looking at Christian theology and how we got here, and we're saying, like, how did we get here? Oh, guess what? Christians thought we're going somewhere else, so who the hell cares about this place?
Yeah, that's how I was raised.
Yeah.
This world will fall away. Think about heaven.
Right.
Okay, but what I'm doing on this earth right now is killing people, so I need to be thinking about
exactly.
That.
And I literally one time, I was so obsessed with this because I was reading all the Left Behind books, like all good Christians
were. I read
were.
All of those too.
Yes. I read every single one of them, front
Same.
Cover to cover, and I was convinced about it. And you know, it was interesting.
I tried to get credit for it in my sophomore English class. My teacher was not down with it. Continue.
No, well, you know that the Nikolai, the bad guy in that, turned out to be a blonde-headed, you know, friend of Russia who takes over the United States. Anyway, that's a whole thing. Maybe that book, the series are more true than we thought.
We need to go back and revisit.
Re-exegete with a new lens. Anyway, it's so funny that I one time spent like hours looking up what is it going to feel like when the world ends. Like, it's like it's going to be 10,000 degrees and we're all going to burn to crisp. I was like, oh my God, this sounds awful.
Yeah,
you know?
It's terrible. Or it'll be like that movie The Day After Tomorrow.
You know? Absolutely.
So you were saying, you know, we need to do body to land and have that reconciliation. And when you're talking about subjugation and colonialism, we also have to do body to body. Right? Mm-hmm. We need that reconciliation too. And he says on page 36, our bodies can only see and hold and know so much. Because of this, difference is always an opportunity to understand God, the world, ourselves, and others more deeply. I think that's what we've been talking about since we started touching on this book and even through Taylor.
That's right.
Difference is not bad, and talking about difference is not bad. And Bantam is taking it further in his Reformation.
Right.
He's saying that is allowing us to understand God.
Right.
Acknowledging and celebrating difference. Not celebrating it in like a melting pot sort of way. Actually contending with what that difference has meant and how we have to change that going forward.
Well, in layman's terms, right, if the goal of Christian faith is to know God more deeply, right, or love God, love others, then every time we encounter the difference of another human being, we see one more part of the mosaic that is the image of God. So, because if the image of God is in all of us and all of us are made in the image of God, then that means the way we discover God's image is more the more difference that we can accept, the more difference that we can learn to love and see and hold as all a part of God.
And Taylor says, get comfortable with difference.
Exactly.
You have to get comfortable
with
it.
Well, she's a theologian. We talked about that last time.
She is.
She's a strong theologian, formidable.
So how does that relate to freedom? Because that's a theme in this chapter, right?
I thought when he dove into that, I was surprised by that turn. I wasn't expecting it to come. And I thought, whoa, man, this feels interesting. I have heard a lot about how individualism is at the root of prejudice. That was an old sort of post-liberal mark. Marty talks about that a lot in all of his books, that individualism is the root of a lot of prejudice. But he's sort of saying that the lie of sovereignty is at the root of a lot of our binaries and dualisms and colonialism and racism, this idea that we are all to our all we need. We are a sovereign self. God is a sovereign self, and made in God's image, we are a sovereign self. But in fact, God's not God is a trinity or whatever you want to think about God. God's not all just sovereignty.
Right.
And so he kind of trying to deconstruct the idea of God in that way and saying God wants us to be free. We're free beings. God's a free being. But freedom is easily manipulated into a way of supporting all forms of oppression, capitalism, racism. You know, I'm free to be racist if I want.
Yeah. And I want the biggest slice of it, which means you have to be less free so I can feel more free. And he's saying that doesn't work at all.
Right. So sometimes freedom is a limitation, right? It's not everything. I always tell people, like, walking down the cereal aisle is not always feeling like freedom. There's too much choice.
The choice is not freedom. That is a book.
Yeah. So there's a lot of ways of thinking about freedom. But he says, you know, we often think of freedom as freedom from parents, from tyranny, from choice, freedom of choice. But he thinks that freedom is about like freedom to. Right? Freedom to do the right thing. Freedom to do the good. Freedom to live the life of greatest flourishing. Right?
Yep. On page 39, he said, I thought I was free when I held on so fiercely to the claim, I am just me. But I was never less free than when I resisted the story of my body told in the Black community. And I would say for me, I am never less free than when I resist the story of the inheritance of whiteness and what that means in the world.
Yes.
And what it looks like for me to be a cis woman.
Right.
If I am resisting that story, I cannot understand the work my body is doing in the world or my freedom as it relates to others.
And you're free to resist that story, but that freedom actually sends you into slavery, right?
Yeah, like I often do.
You become enslaved to heterosexism, right?
Yep.
You know,
ableism,
cisgenderisms, you know, white supremacy. You're like willingly becoming a slave to the dominant ideology of the time because you don't want to really be free. You want to be numb.
Right.
Right.
Or I want to feel safe.
Right.
And right now those things make me feel safe. That's a lie. None of those things make me safe.
Yeah. Well, I loved how in 42, he said the freedom of God is not limitless choice. Freedom is creativity and peace of creating new things with the trees, the people, the movements that are given to us. And how he talks about later than on 43 that he talks about his son getting this great story of his son just wanting constant Legos and needing more Legos. And he goes to the store and one Lego is not good enough as the other. And so he's experiencing early capitalism, you know.
Yeah.
I need this pair of Jordans. No, those Jordans.
But I only have this much money. Sorry.
What am I going to do? Yeah. Right. So he says this freedom only led his son to freedoms that he did not have but believed he should have. This freedom only led him to a kind of bondage, a prison that allowed him to only look out upon a window of a faraway fields of what he could not have, never seeing the possibilities of what was given to him. So this is my theory on capitalism and its moral depravity, is that it creates desires that we didn't have and makes us constant ingrates because we can never be fully appreciative of what we have because we're always looking for the next new thing because it's constantly creating and stimulating new desires within us that we didn't already have in order to fulfill the market.
And desires that if we fill them, we're getting something that we don't actually need.
So we'll never be satisfied.
He didn't need the person on a horse.
Right.
Right.
He had
stuff at home. He could do that, but he really believed he did. And then Ms. Bantam tells the story, he gets the lesser version and then he just discards it at home.
And
that's also how it works.
Exactly. And I think that's what this is about. Like, so bodies matter. This is the story of us trying to figure out how to make each other free. We're engaged in our own liberation and working for the liberation of you who are listening and working for the liberation of the whole world. We want everybody to be liberated, right? In order to do that, we have to understand that sometimes the best way to freedom is to start with our limits.
Yeah.
And say, actually, I'm a white dude. I don't understand Black experience, period. I can kind of get it from reading some stuff, but I can't really get it in my body and my soul.
I will never know it.
Right. I will never know women's experience. You know, I will never know gay experience. I can love gay people. I can be around gay people all my life. I will never truly know what it feels like to live in a gay body. I'm just not going to know that. And that's a limitation that I have. And actually, my greatest freedom comes in understanding my limitations.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's so counterintuitive, right? But powerful for us.
Yeah. I think trying to explain to other white people how freeing it's been for me to say, oh, I'm a racist
Yeah,
because I was
exactly.
born here. Okay, so that's true. It's not because I'm a mean person or a bad person or because I want to
No.
do these things, but intent and impact, right? Bantam talks about this, Taylor talks
Yes,
about this.
yes.
As soon as I understand that even my good intentions aren't enough,
Right.
that is actually my path out. That is freeing to
Yeah,
me. That
yeah.
feels good now. It didn't for the first 6 years I was thinking about this.
Right.
When I finally realized that that was freedom from bondage and freedom from liberation to actually understand that, then it changed everything for me.
Yeah, and when we well we I, when we say that we're not racist, we find ourselves in bondage to lies because
Yeah.
we are caught in a system, a racist system. So how are we not complicit within that system? We are. So how are we not then racist? Oh, well, I'm not personally racist. Well, actually, if we look at your implicit bias, let's check it. No, you really are.
Yeah.
So okay, well, I'm implicitly biased racist, but I'm not explicitly racist. We find ourselves equivocating constantly and
Absolutely.
trying to figure out how to create the lie that we want to live in because we don't want to deal with the truth about ourselves. That's bondage. I mean, that's actually, if you think about like Christian tradition, that delusion is the most deep kind of sinfulness all the Christian tradition has ever created and talked about is the delusion that you are not sinful is the worst kind of sin.
Absolutely.
The idea that you,
Yeah.
well, I, oh, I'm not sinful. I'm not racist. I don't do anything wrong. You know, well,
Right.
let's inventory. You know, that
And if it
delusion
sounds
itself is
like
the
that, I
worst.
didn't mean that. But again, that then you're further away from salvation,
Right. No, no,
right?
no. Yeah. And what is salvation? Repent. Tell the truth about yourself and find grace. But you have to start with the truth, right?
Yeah.
So we invite you all, as we come to the end of this podcast, to look into your heart and to think through what is your bondage? What's holding you bondage? And what ways are you seeking freedoms that are not really leading to freedom, but leading to further bondage? And what are the ways that you could accept your bodily limitations as a path toward liberation?
Thanks for having me. This has been great. I
Yeah.
can't wait for Bantam to come. This is a really good book, and you can pick up your copy in Heaton Hall
That's
in
right.
church, right?
We'll see you soon.